Which of these camps were established when the first group of you got up there? The Helga Bating camp was where the woman was sick with Soroche, and the Shining camp was where most of the others were with that been caught in the slide.
This is true. The other camps were dropped in at our request. The Air Force put them in. The Army furnished the tentage.
And now, so that puts one camp at 10,200 feet. That's about a little bit above Camp Muir,
right,
say, on Rainier. One at 13,000, which would be above Gibraltar. One at 14,500, which would be above the top of Rainier.
Right.
Now, how many men did you have at each camp, and what were their functions?
Well, we had 20 men, finally, in the 14,500-foot camp. We had 20 men also at the 13,000-foot level. And the plan then was to take a team of strong climbers and move them from the 14,000-foot level, 14,500, on through the Bating camp, which was about 3.5 hours up a pretty sheer face and over 800 feet of ice wall, where there was a fixed rope to be installed, and on up the ridge to the Shoning camp. And this particular team would start shuttling the injured down to the Bating camp. In the meanwhile, the people from that were left at the 14.5 level would go to the Bating camp to make an interception of this shuttle. They, in turn, would drop down to the 14.5 level, while the people at 13,000 would move up to 14.5, and in this way, these victims would be shuttled by relay all the way down the mountain to where they could be picked up by chopper.
Well, now, what did you encounter in the way of weather up there? We kept getting reports that the weather wasn't good, but that's about as much detail as we had down here.
Well, up to Saturday morning, the weather wasn't too bad, and Saturday afternoon, the weather started to deteriorate. Actually, it started to drop from the top down, and by Saturday evening, the mountain was socked in, the wind started to blow, and then it snowed. And it's pretty hard to keep track of time up there because it's daylight all the time, but sometime Saturday night, it started to snow. And between then and sometime Sunday morning, there was a total of 6 feet of snow fell, and the tents had to be completely removed from their position, plus the fact that people had to stay up during the night to hold these tents up and shovel them out every once in a while to keep them from caving in, plus the fact there was 100-mile-an-hour winds blowing in this area. And as a result, the small mountain tents, which were shredded, and this flattened 6 small mountain tents to the point that we had 18 people living in a 10-man mountain tent at the 13,000-foot level, and these 18 people were in this tent for a 48-hour period.
Well, during that amount of time, I think they could get pretty well on each other's nerves.
Well, mountaineers, and especially rescue personnel, are pretty well disciplined, and they understand the condition, and it's not a matter of whether you like somebody or not. It's a matter of survival now.
Well, now, what actual rescue work was accomplished? You had this plan set up for bringing them down, but as we got the reports here, the taking out was actually done by the planes.
Well, this is true to the extent that the weather was such, and people did risk their neck with private equipment there, and they did bring 3 of the injured down. However, I don't believe that the Whitakers could have made it down without rescue parties being there, and the weather at this time had deteriorated to the point where these planes and choppers could no longer get in there. And this could have happened. It was real tricky for this little helicopter that went in. And this could have also compounded our situation. These people gambled. They were gambling this machinery. They were using it at a point way above what it was designed to go. and working in down drafts and up drafts, the slightest little mistake, and we could have had a double situation other than the plane that already went down within 200 feet of the Shonan camp.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago when the Coast and Geodetic was measuring Rainier, the difficulty they had with the chopper there because of the thin air, just not the rotors didn't want to work, didn't want to hold.
This is true, and if they fly these mountains, they like to fly them either early in the morning or late in the evening, but during the day, if you get any warm weather, then you have terrific updrafts and turbulence, and then, of course, at night, as the weather cools off, this weather starts settling down again, then you start picking up these downdrafts. And the Whitaker boys was telling me that at the 17-2 level, this big army chopper that tried to come in there, he tried to make one approach from the downdraft side, and he wasn't having much luck, so he circled around the other side of the ridge, and they said he must have been going over 100 miles an hour, which is really hard to estimate, actually, but this was this downdraft that was pulling him down through, which was actually being sucked down this about a 3,000-foot vertical wall. And this is terrific to try and operate, and, of course, you get caught into one of these, and you're up there in a place where you have no more power to accelerate with. You're just at the mercy of these things, and then you have additional work for rescue parties. There's no substitute for the ground parties. They're insurance.
Well, now, your ground party did intercept which group on the way down?
They intercepted the two Whitaker twins at about 16,500 feet.
And how far did they bring them down?
They brought them all the way to the 10-2 level, and they had to, this Lou Whitaker had something that was bothered him, and matter of fact, his back and his hip would become paralyzed, and he had to have direct aid by rope coming down this ice wall by De Molinar.
Well, there's been some talk down here, John, about the large amount of money that was spent on that, with estimates running between $100,000 and $150,000. Did you see any figures on that up there?
No, they were starting to break it down at Anchorage as to what the cost was. There was some talk about how you could write off the cost of these choppers. We talked to Major Usher there at Kaltikna on the cost of these choppers, and you can't figure out the time during the day, actually, because these choppers in training would normally fly so many hours a day. And actually, where they were being used, they were flying less hours because they were standing by waiting for weather or waiting for one thing and another. So it was determined that they were actually utilizing less time than they would in normal training missions. It was unfortunate that they lost these two in the plane, but this, again, was no fault of the rescue. Rescue people, the coordinators of the rescue, were asking these bush planes at certain times to fly reconnaissance because their communication lines weren't working. In this particular case, this man had no orders to go up. However, he was up in the area and probably thought he was doing a favor. At the same time, he had a passenger with him. And it seems to me that a good pilot with good lots of experience would realize the fact that if he's going above the normal altitude that the plane is designed to fly, that he would take every advantage. And this way, it was our thought that he should eliminate this passenger because this just added additional weight.
I remember a couple of years ago when that pair of shantyboat missionaries from the west side of Vancouver Island came down and left a hymn that they were translating in the car, which sounded like a suicide note, and started up the mountain in tennis shoes for the fun of it and got stuck. That nearly the mountain rescue people all showed up and went up and put in a couple of dirty days of work up there looking for them before they brought them back in. But at that time, there was great disgust expressed at the stupidity of anybody who would make this climb. I gather that in this case, this is rescuing one of your own who got in trouble through no stupidity.
No, I wouldn't say this. It doesn't make any difference who the individual is. We never asked their names when we go out. However, in this particular case, we did know. You have a life up there. The life is endangered. And we have the training and the know-how and the equipment to go. So it's only logical that we go.
Well, I didn't mean that you had any reluctance about going last time, but it was a... you were called away as a result of somebody's foolishness, whereas in this one it was...
Foolishness. Because these people were up there. To climb a mountain of this size, this takes acclimatization. This means a series of camps slowly put on up this mountain so that you can acclimatize yourself. And I talked to Schoening when he was brought out, and I think he had the best evaluation of it. And Schoening is certainly a man with a lot of experience. And they climbed this mountain with such speed that they robbed their systems of oxygen, and especially their brain. And they weren't thinking properly. And they couldn't think properly because the brain was sort of numbed from this high pressure that they went up under. Because he said that he just vaguely remembers falling. He says it was on a slope that they should have never fell on. They were over the worst part of it. He vaguely remembers himself trying to stop, but couldn't function properly. This is foolishness. This is foolish. This is absolutely foolish. These people should have taken about 10 or 15 days to climb this mountain. This 3 days, who's going to benefit by it?
Won the battle in the courtrooms of America and struck.